It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the shipments and unique cargo traveling through Port Milwaukee terminals and how it affects Wisconsin's economy and access to the global marketplace. Call in with a question or share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jackie Q. Carter is director of Port Milwaukee. Jackie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's discuss the cruise ship sector first. Port Milwaukee opened the season earlier this month, docking the first recreational cruise ship of the year. Dozens of arrivals expected this summer. Is the cruise ship economy growing within the port?
We believe that it is. We've seen a really big increase. So in 2019, that was the last active cruise season we had before the pandemic. We had about 1,000 cruise passengers. And in 2022, we had over 13,000. So there was a big jump. There are new vessels that are entering the Great Lakes. So Viking has two vessels, both of which will visit Port Milwaukee this year. One has already come. We expect the second one to arrive this weekend. But there's other companies as well. We've got right now the Hanseatic Inspiration is parked over at our cruise dock right behind the Lake Express Ferry. So a bunch of different companies bringing expedition cruising through the Great Lakes, and lots of Great Lakes ports are preparing for this business. So we do believe that it's growing, and it'll continue to be strong. People are really excited about what they can experience on those Great Lakes expeditions.
Jackie, I saw the images of the Viking Octantis, and I was like, wow, that is coming into Port Milwaukee. This is like it goes to like polar regions and it cruises the Great Lakes. What does that mean for tourism?
I mean, we're getting different a different demographic than we've gotten. Some people who may not have thought about Milwaukee because Viking is coming here, they're getting an opportunity to see all that we have to offer. And people are really excited about it. We get calls, for folks who are flying in from other parts of the country, other parts of the world, just trying to make sure that they have all of their logistics in place for when they're going to be here. So that first Viking ship that came in this year, there was actually a local couple that was on that vessel who'd been on the ship, I believe, about 65 days. They started in Antarctica and ended their trip here in Milwaukee.
Wow.
Well, yeah, really, really wide variety of experiences, really wide variety of where people are coming from. So from not just from the U.S., but from Canada, from Europe, from all over the place.
And it means easier access to local Wisconsinites who wish to board a ship.
That's right. And we have some of that, too. Some folks who are looking to have that experience are starting right here at home, and then they get to experience other parts of the world, but starting right here in Milwaukee. So really exciting for all of us.
Walk us through a little bit of the docking infrastructure, what the vision is, especially for the South Shore cruise dock.
Yeah, so right now we have three different places where we can dock a cruise vessel. Pier Wisconsin, our cruise dock right behind the Lake Express Ferry where that vessel is parked. And then in our commercial space, our city heavy lift dock, we're looking to build South Shore Cruise Dock out, which would be the east side of the parcel right behind Lake Express Ferry. And then we would then move from the commercial space where the city heavy lift dock, that's where Viking is currently parking. And that's because the ship is so large, the depth of water that's required is better there. So we're not able to accommodate ships of that size down at Pier Wisconsin, where some of the smaller vessels can go. And so we're looking to build out that South Shore cruise dock so that we can accommodate the larger ships over there.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Port Milwaukee's leader, Jackie Carter, is here as we look at port activity and what to expect over the next months. You can join in with your questions about tonnage and shipments, other questions you have at 800-642-1234. Jackie, stepping back a little bit more broadly here on your priorities, what are your goals for expanding the business of the port this year?
So the way that we've talked about it internally, we're calling this year the year that we're working to build on the momentum. So we saw 2022 as kind of the year that we were bouncing back from some of the things that we saw where we saw some decreases during the pandemic. We're really looking to build on that. So 2022 gave us an opportunity not only to reintroduce cruising to this market, but also to demonstrate our ability through our employees here at the port, but also through our tenants and customers and different partners in the community, demonstrating our ability to support business. So that means helping them to get their commodities from this region out into international markets, but also helping businesses that might need materials from international spaces get those into the region. And so just continuing to build on that momentum, helping to share those examples of some of the things that we've done well, and helping businesses that may not know how we can have a hand in facilitating their success understand what we're able to offer. So we're building on that. We're building our infrastructure out. We talked about the South Shore Cruise Dock, but we're also working to ensure that we are making sure that our terminals and our facilities are able to handle the amount of business that's coming in here. We've got the DeLong Agricultural Facility that's going to be coming online pretty soon. So building that out, and that's going to really be a great resource for farmers, growers, producers in the region to be able to get their agricultural products out to international markets. So just really building on all of those things, trying to see if there's opportunities to, continue down some of the paths that we've started to pave, and looking to be innovative. If there's new ways and new avenues that we can enter, looking at those things. So just trying to be open, but also strengthening what we've done well.
We're going to talk further about the Agricultural Maritime Export Facility and what that will mean. But I first want to look at a little bit more on the funding streams, because federal lawmakers approved a $1 trillion funding package for infrastructure projects back in 2021. And wondering, is any of that federal money flowing to Port Milwaukee?
We sure hope so. We are. We've submitted a grant request to build out some other opportunities here at the port. So working with our tenants to develop some different ideas. So a couple of different grants, one through the city of Milwaukee or through the port, and one through the state of Wisconsin Department of Transportation, have been submitted for some projects. So, and I don't want to get too into those because, you know, they're still working on those, and we don't know if that those funds will come through. But we're certainly going after those. The port has had a great reputation of being successful in leveraging grants so that we can not only support what we do, but also leverage local funding to be able to operate at a level where we would not normally be able to operate if we just relied on our own resources.
Okay, so would those grant funds be going toward infrastructure? Would they be going toward growing the port? Like, what aspects of the grants can you reach that if you that you wouldn't be able to otherwise?
Yeah, traditionally, so historically, the port's grants have gone towards infrastructure projects.
Mm-hmm.
So use those dollars to, we own railroad, so making sure that not only are we maintaining what we have, but building out where we see a need. So we need to expand rail. If we need to upgrade rail, we've done a lot of that work where we were upgrading our facilities, paving. It just really depends on the grant source, where the funds are coming from, and what the requirements are. But we try to, if there's an opportunity to leverage funds to support what we've already got planned as far as, like, our capital improvements, we'll go after those funds and try to, get that work done.
Jackie Q. Carter, Director of Port Milwaukee, as we explore the vessels, the shipments, and the activity at Milwaukee's harbor and the economic effects of that tonnage. Be part of the conversation about international shipping on the Great Lakes. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. As hundreds of vessels move through Port Milwaukee each year, we get up to speed on port activity and how it contributes to Wisconsin's overall economy. Join in at any point throughout the conversation. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jackie Carter is Port Milwaukee Director. Jackie, let's turn to the new agricultural maritime export facility, the DeLong facility. How will this new terminal, what will that mean for Wisconsin farmers and the agriculture markets?
So we were really excited about the DeLong company being in a public-private partnership with us to really help to move agricultural products through the region out into international markets. And last year that really became, or earlier this year, the importance of that facility became even greater because we had a grain facility that's at the Inner Harbor here at Port Milwaukee. That facility was sold. And our understanding is that there will not be agricultural products moved through that facility. So that just makes the DeLong facility that much more important because farmers and growers really need a way to get their, you know, a cost-effective way to get their products to market. So what DeLong has planned right now for their initial phase is they're going to be moving dry distillers grains, we call DDGs, which is a byproduct of the ethanol process. They'll be moving that product out into the international markets, and that's going to be used as an animal feed. But there's also the opportunity now to move other types of grains, so grain, corn, soy, different types of agricultural products. And so we already have seen some inquiry from some of the growers in the region about possibly using that as a kind of a release valve because we've lost that grain facility that was once located right here.
That's what I'm wondering. I mean, what has happened to the movement of these crops, these raw materials before this facility? I mean, is it alleviating pressures in the commodities transportation system for farmers in the upper Midwest?
It absolutely is. And I'll tell you, I've been to conferences across the country. And when you talk about the agricultural movements at the federal level, there's room to, you know, grow even bigger and to produce even more and to export even more. And so I think, you know, as you see DeLong come online and you see them expand what they're able to offer, you're going to see that those exports are going to increase. And that's exactly what we want to do at the state level, at the national level. But for us here at the local level, the regional level, we really want to make sure that we have that resource available to the farmers in the area.
What about, Jackie, Port Milwaukee's location, being that northernmost point on the Great Lakes that a river barge can navigate from, say, you know, New Orleans or Houston? How does its location affect your tonnage, affect the port activity, and what's possible?
Sure. So we know that shipping materials by vessel is one of the safest, most efficient, environmentally friendly ways to ship commodities. So being able to get commodities from all these different points, from the south and from the east, through the Mississippi, but then also through the Great Lakes, St. Lawrence Seaway, being that point to be able to get commodities up to this part of the country, Port Milwaukee plays a significant role in that. So that means that, you know, as a port, is really where all the modes of transportation come together. So if you get products here on a barge, we can put them on a truck or we can put them on rail cars and get them to other parts of the country where they may not have water access. So that us being that most northern point on the Mississippi, that's huge for us.
When I think of these barges, I think of container shipping, but that is probably only a piece of it. What might be the activity like in a typical day at the port? Like, what's coming in and out?
Well, we're moving. We've got some of our tenants are moving steel. We've got salt. Everybody knows salt's a huge one, right? So we think about the winter and the roads, and a lot of the folks who are using salt for the municipalities, a lot of that salt comes through the port. So that's one. But we also have project cargo. So there are we had like some limestone blocks come through here. We've seen the yacht structures. So people are putting yachts together. Those can come through the port. So it really just depends. We try to facilitate, if somebody's looking to ship something, we try to connect them with a partner here at the port that's able to do that, who's, you know, got the resources and got the experience in that particular area to move those commodities. So that can mean project cargoes, which are bigger pieces, but then also bulk cargoes. So that's like the salt and limestone and, different things like that.
Talking with Port Milwaukee's Director Jackie Carter, giving us a glimpse of the port's harbor, what is coming in and out of Milwaukee, and taking your questions at 800-642-1234. We're going to turn to the environment now. Leading us off is Marcus in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, Ms. Carter. So I live in Milwaukee, obviously. My question for you is, has Port Milwaukee taken and done any advanced planning to make sure that we mitigate any potential invasive species that might be coming in with the expanded shipping? Just due to simple fact, we have zebra mussels already here. We have the Asian carp coming up the Mississippi and then coming across in Illinois. And so I guess I was wondering if there's anything in the planning to protect wildlife and maintain the wonderful way we have for wildlife down here in Milwaukee.
Yes. Great question. So that work, Port Milwaukee partners with a lot of different organizations and associations. One of those is the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Seaway Development Corporation, and also the, there's a binational group. And so there's the Canadian side and also the U.S. side. But they have the responsibility with ensuring that things like that are not happening. So when those vessels are coming through the locks, they're looking at those ships. There's laws in place as to what they're allowed to do if they're able to bring water into the country and different things like that. So those things are being addressed mostly before they enter the Great Lakes. So there are laws, there's regulations, and different things in place to address those issues.
So like loading and unloading the untreated ballast water is happening before they reach Port Milwaukee?
That's right, yep.
Okay. Marcus, thank you so much for the call. We also heard from Chris emailed to ask, how is this increased activity at the port affecting wildlife, and what is the further environmental impact there? Jackie, can you go into that any further?
Well, we are mindful of that, and so we work with our partners here in the city, the Harbor District, Milwaukee Riverkeeper. So we're being mindful of those things, and we don't believe that there's a significant impact that the increased activity is having. Moving cargo through a vessel is one of the safest ways to do it, but we are also mindful. Are there areas where we need to be more considerate about how those vessels are moving? Is there infrastructure that we need to put in place to ensure that fish and wildlife are able to, you know, still produce and reproduce and survive? So we consider all those things, but we work with partners to make sure that we understand those issues so that we can address them, and we work with them to do that.
I wonder if you could talk about the stewardship program, the ship, I'll capitalize there, about emission standards for vessels, that too a climate issue.
Yeah, so we know that, you know, clean shipping, green shipping is something that we're moving towards. And one of the things that was implemented here at Port Milwaukee is the stewardship program, which incentivizes vessel owners who have invested in some type of green infrastructure for their vessel. So if they've put on advanced equipment, if they are in compliance with green marine standards, so any kind of environmental upgrades that they've done, they can submit an application annually. We look at that. They have to meet three requirements in order to qualify, and then they receive a discount on their dockage. And so for a company that we're seeing, you know, dozens of their ships, that can be significant for them. So there's a 10% decrease to what they would pay for dockage. And dockage is basically a parking fee for a vessel.
Okay. We only have a few seconds left. Are you concerned at all about any dramatic changes in water levels to Lake Michigan?
We work with Army Corps of Engineers to monitor that, and we're trying to be as prepared as we can. So that's something we're also in conversation with UW-Milwaukee, or the University of Michigan, to address some of those issues. So monitoring that very closely.
Jackie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Jackie Q. Carter, new Port of Milwaukee Director, confirmed by the Common Council in February. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. And we have more to come here on The Morning Show as we look for a Green Bay roundup of news developments and issues concerning northeastern Wisconsin. So stay tuned for that here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here is producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a group of model train aficionados.
The oldest Lionel Railroad Club in the world is hiding inside a boxy commercial building in New Berlin, just outside Milwaukee. Jane Hampton discovered the club when she was ready to say goodbye to a special set of vintage Lionel trains.
When I was growing up, my grandparents' trains circled the Christmas tree in their Pennsylvania farmhouse. The engine was heavy, and it pulled four cars around a sturdy metal track. I would sit on the floor, run the trains too fast, watch them derail, and line them up again. After my grandparents died, I brought the trains to Wisconsin. My boys and I set them up a few times, but the old transformer would send up sparks, and I was afraid the Christmas tree would catch fire. So finally, I decided to donate the trains. The guys at the Milwaukee Lionel Train Club told me to load up my set and come on over. I walked through a nondescript back door and into a railroad wonderland. Three giant layouts run 17 trains at one time. They chug through mini villages and farms and cities. The club was founded in 1947 in a Milwaukee basement. Steve Smiley is president.
It started small and stayed small for many years in the basement. And then they got a garage and they moved into the basement of a church. This is our fourth layout.
Now the club has about 250 members. At the spring open house, I met dozens of visitors playing with the interactive layouts, including 9-year-old Elliot.
There's a Thomas train and there's a James train. You can press a direction button, a whistle button, and a bell button.
Are they gonna do the rocket ship yet?
Oh, you want to do the rocket ship? Let's go do the rocket ship, all right? Turn on the beacon, push a button to start the countdown. This one here. Let's get ready. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, blast off. Whoa! What do you think, huh?
Good.
Ian Rogers from Milwaukee brought his kids, Elon and Jabril.
Well, their grandfather, who just recently passed, unfortunately, was a lover of trains. And so he actually built them down in the basement, built them from scratch, and we'll put them all together and for them to be able to see the cities and all that good stuff. And so they were missing them kind of through the week, and we saw the open house, and we said, pew, we're on our way.
Rebecca Johnson drove her kids over from Madison.
My oldest is almost 4 and he's almost 2 and they're both just like blown away by everything.
There's Percy.
Years ago, the 20s through the 60s, everything in the country was rail.
Josh Albers is from Waukesha. He builds layouts at home for his grandson, Elijah.
Every kid had trains back when I was growing up. And I'm just trying to pass that along to my grandson.
I asked Steve Smiley about the trains my grandparents passed down to me. Turns out they were from the 1932 Lionel catalog and would have cost $17 back then.
So this is a 262 steam engine. I happen to have one, and they run great. The gondola would be what you hauled along. You know, we used to put our hamster in them and haul them around the railroad tracks. The boxcar, you know, had to go along, and of course the caboose.
So if I tried to sell this on eBay instead of coming here, what would I have gotten for it?
Well, for a 262 steam engine and tender, you'd probably get about $150 for it. Now, if it was in brand new box and it was pristine, which it probably wasn't, but if it was, you could get as much as $500 for it.
It was not in a brand new box and it was not pristine, but the old set has found a joyful new home.
A choo-choo train!
Jane Hampton brought us that story on the Lionel Railroad Club. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. WPR reporter in the northeastern part of the state, Joe Schultz, is here to catch us up on his latest stories. Joe's based in the Fox Valley, covering regional news and stories of statewide interest about business, labor, and the economy. Call in at any time with your questions, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Joe, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So let's start with hospitals and the state budget. The legislature's budget committee is in the final weeks of crafting its two-year plan for state spending. And you recently reported on how hospitals are calling for higher Medicaid reimbursement rates. So let's listen a bit here to Wisconsin Hospital Association CEO Eric Borgeding.
Access to healthcare in Wisconsin is some of the best in the country. What we want to avoid is having it start to crumble.
Having it start to crumble, Joe, what are hospitals seeking from state lawmakers?
So they're requesting $185 million annually to bring Medicaid reimbursement closer to the actual cost of care. You know, right now they say that Medicaid reimbursement covers roughly 67% of the cost of providing healthcare, and they want to bring it closer to the actual cost. So I think they say that this would bring it to about 85%. And they've really kind of cited Medicaid reimbursement as one of the major financial hurdles that they're kind of facing right now. Obviously, you know, hospitals are kind of dealing with inflation like the rest of us. And then they're also, you know, combating a labor shortage like a lot of other employers. And that's caused their labor costs to increase. And, you know, in the first part of 2022, a lot of hospitals were operating at a deficit. And the association says that, you know, that's kind of untenable. So they're asking the state to kind of boost Medicaid reimbursement to bring it closer to cost. They're not trying to be reimbursed above cost.
And so this would be a way for them to bring some measure of relief to their balance sheets. Would this fix the financial position they're in?
It's unclear, I guess. They say that it would significantly help. It wouldn't necessarily address inflation. You know, they made a big point. The hospital association kind of made a big point of they're not asking lawmakers to kind of fix their margins. They're just asking for a little bit of relief. And the one part of healthcare that lawmakers have, you know, the most say in, and that's kind of the Medicaid program, which is a federal program, but it's kind of administered by the state through Badger Care.
You've been also following the consolidation of hospitals in Wisconsin. Several hospitals have merged over the past year, Freidert Health and ThetaCare, the latest to announce merger plans. What is driving this consolidation in the industry?
So it's kind of a couple things. It's, you know, some of the challenges that we talked about, like inflation and the labor shortage, and also, you know, those Medicaid reimbursement rates. And, you know, spokespeople for the hospital association said that, you know, mergers in Wisconsin haven't really hurt competition. And, you know, they're kind of designed to, you know, make hospitals, I don't want to say leaner because they're getting bigger, but, you know, just kind of put them in a better position to weather some of these hurdles that they're kind of facing. And it also, you know, like proponents of mergers say that they could provide, you know, some hospitals with different specialists or some patients with different specialists, because different hospitals have different areas of expertise. But, you know, critics of mergers say that they, on average, lead to higher prices. Primarily, that's, you know, mergers that are in one geographic area. But there's also some evidence that, I guess, they're called cross-market mergers. There's, you know, some evidence that those also lead to higher prices. And those are mergers when, like, I think ThetaCare and Freightert is a really good example, because Freightert's, you know, mostly in the southeast part of the state. And mm-hmm. then ThetaCare is up by me in northeast Wisconsin. And also they serve central Wisconsin. So they're in different regions of the state. And that's kind of an example of a cross-market merger. But there's some evidence that those mergers also have an impact on price. But, you know, it's just kind of a little too early to tell. But there's some worries from folks.
Okay, keeping an eye on those alliances. We're going to move now to housing. A bipartisan group of state lawmakers unveiled a package of bills this month in an effort to improve access to affordable housing. And one of the lead sponsors was on on WPR Central Time, our afternoon program, to discuss the legislation. Here's Republican State Senator Romaine Quinn of Cameron talking about zoning rules.
Developers need certainty. That's a huge component of this. They have to know that when they find a plot of land in a particular area that's zoned a particular way, when they develop a project, they have to know it's going to be approved in a timely manner, because our construction season is very short in northern Wisconsin. And if it's not here, they'll build somewhere else. So what we want to do is say, hey, communities, go back and look through your ordinances, through your master plans, through your zoning requirements. And is this really where you want to be? Or could there be more flexibility? Because once these are set, you have to approve projects that fit your criteria. So communities would be no longer be allowed to move the ball on developers when a project is trying to come in.
You've examined this legislation. What are its supporters trying to accomplish?
So I guess really kind of the big thing that, you know, the supporters say is driving the housing shortage in their mind is, you know, there's an imbalance of supply and demand. After the Great Recession, we just home building and, you know, just housing construction really kind of slowed down during the Great Recession, and it never really, you know, picked back up. It was starting to pick back up, and then the pandemic hit. So the package of bills, you know, most of them are aimed at providing, you know, financial incentives to developers in the form of low to no interest loans. And those, you know, for a lot of housing projects, developers have to borrow money. And that's kind of a big part of the construction costs. And with high interest rates right now, you know, low to no interest loans from the state could, you know, help spur development, especially in, you know, some of these unconventional projects, like above, you know, there's housing in a lot of Wisconsin downtowns that's above Main Street businesses, mm-hmm. You know, like retail establishments and things like that. So those aren't like big housing developments with a lot of units. So they're not necessarily as financially viable. So these loans could help make those kind of developments a little more, you know, financially viable for developers. And then, you know, the piece that Romaine Quinn was kind of talking about is a bill that Gary Duchesne with the League of Wisconsin Municipalities kind of described to me as, he called it a truth in zoning bill, because it really kind of, it prevents people from kind of coming in at the last minute to block housing development, as long as that housing development meets the criteria kind of set forth in a municipality's zoning rules. But like the key thing with that is, you know, if there's a development that doesn't fit like the zoning code for a specific area, like say a developer is trying to build a big apartment complex in a single family neighborhood, and they need that parcel to get rezoned or a variance, you know, community members could still come in and kind of petition their local leaders and say, you know, we don't think that you should rezone this property. So it, you know, gives a little bit more certainty for those developments that kind of meet existing zoning criteria, but it still kind of gives
a voice
residents room to kind of negotiate if it falls outside of those criteria.
We dig into the reporting of WPR's Joe Schultz, based in the Green Bay Bureau, where he covers business, labor, the economy, other issues. Be part of our conversation. Call in with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with WPR reporter Joe Schultz, based in the Fox Valley in the northeastern part of the state, breaking down his recent reporting on housing and healthcare, economic issues, and the repercussions on the rest of the state. Join in by calling with a question. Share your thoughts at any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Joe, U.S. News and World Report recently names Green Bay the nation's best place to live. Why is that?
So each year, you know, the U.S. News and World Report ranks the 150 biggest municipalities in the country. And Green Bay, it turned out, you know, Green Bay was the number one place to live in the country. It was the only Wisconsin city to crack the top 10. Madison came in at number 11 and Milwaukee was 65th. And, you know, they said Green Bay is affordable, there's low crime, and, you know, there's varied attractions from places like Lambeau Field to the Bay Beach Amusement Park. And there's also a ton of outdoor activities that people can enjoy in all seasons.
What did you hear from people in Green Bay about this award?
So, I don't know. It was kind of funny. I did some man on the street interviews, and it's always kind of an awkward thing to be just walking downtown with a microphone asking people to talk. But there was an older couple, and they were kind of biking through downtown. And when I broke the news to the wife, she was just like super thrilled. And, you know, they told me that they moved to the city in the 1980s, and, you know, they raised their kids there, and now their kids are raising their children in Green Bay. And, you know, kind of the biggest thing that I heard over and over was that, you know, the city's a good place to raise a family. And, you know, it's got a small town feel with big city amenities was kind of what folks were kind of telling me. But they also did have some pet peeves, but they're, you know, pretty similar to some of the pet peeves you'd hear in most of Wisconsin. Like one person mentioned that, you know, the roads could use some work, but winters are pretty tough on the roads here in Wisconsin. one person said, you know, beware of football season because it can get a little rowdy on Sundays. so it was, you know, people that I spoke to kind of overwhelmingly like had a pretty positive view of the city. And, you know, they did have some pet peeves, but I think everybody's got some pet peeves wherever they live, right?
That is true. And it sounds like they were very kind about those particular pet peeves. U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg recently visited Green Bay to tout the bipartisan infrastructure law. Let's listen to part of his remarks during that visit.
This city and this region is so key to Midwest commerce and so well positioned because of its infrastructure. You got a major highway just half a mile away. You got that rail line that connects right into the port. You got links into the St. Lawrence Seaway, a shipping route that can get goods from the Midwest out all around the world.
The transportation secretary really pinpointing placemaking there in terms of commerce. What else did he talk about during the visit?
So kind of the main thing that was kind of talked about, he held a press conference with Tammy Baldwin and then local leaders. And the main thing that they kind of talked about was this $10.1 million grant that the Port of Green Bay received to turn an old decommissioned power plant at the mouth of the bay into a state-of-the-art port facility. That was kind of the main thing. But then he opened it up and took a couple questions, and he took a question about a proposal to extend passenger rail from Milwaukee to Green Bay. And, you know, he said he feels the region can put forth, you know, a strong proposal on that as well.
Okay, so that hangs in the balance, but rail did rise to the top there as still a pressing issue for that region.
Yeah, he said, you know, Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich, you know, brought it up almost as soon as he, you know, greeted the transportation secretary. And You know, there's local leaders a few months ago signed off on, you know, they want passenger rail to extend through the Fox Cities and into Green Bay. You know, I think, you know, mayors and city administrators or city managers kind of signed off on a letter of intent, just saying, you know, that this is something that we want.
All on the same page. I'm going to reintroduce you here as we talk with WPR's Green Bay and Northeastern Wisconsin reporter Joe Schultz about the latest news and developments, broader implications. You can join in with a question at 800-642-1234. Carol is joining us from Milwaukee. Carol, what's on your mind?
I was wondering if the reporter knows about the problem of housing in or if they have anything going on in Green Bay connected with the change from poorer renters to richer renters. They come in, big construction and big changes happen in whole neighborhoods where people end up having to move out because the rents go up so high, and it's happening en masse in the north side of Milwaukee. And it's very hard on poorer people, whereas people from the suburbs might want to come back into the city and be close to each other again, you know. So do they have anything like that in Green Bay?
Carol, thank you. Joe?
So, you know, affordable housing is a big issue across Wisconsin in almost any community. I think local leaders will kind of tell you that affordable housing is a major issue. Green Bay did a study a few years back that kind of looked at, you know, how many units the city needs. I know in Northeast Wisconsin, some homeless shelters have said that, you know, rents are kind of getting to a point in a lot of places where it's hard for them to provide subsidized housing programs, because those programs need to be offered for fair market rents, I want to say. But I haven't heard anything specifically about Green Bay, but I know it is a major issue kind of across the state that local leaders are kind of looking at. And, you know, it's kind of a universal issue.
We only have a few seconds left, Joe, but what are you watching for next in your coverage of the northeastern part of the state as we move toward the height of summer?
You know, I mean, EAA, there's an annual air festival that's coming to Oshkosh. So that'll be something to watch, you know, and just kind of looking for interesting developments in, you know, Appleton, Green Bay, the Fox Cities, and, you know, prepping for the NFL draft and Jordan Love, his first season under center. You know, I think that'll be kind of an interesting thing to watch.
Got to round it to the Packers. Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Joe Schultz is a reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio based in the Fox Valley. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.